Let me ask you this question. What about the popular diets promoted to the general public over the past 30 years since those guidelines? Initially, most programs followed the low-fat, high-carb orthodoxy. The most popular diet was Pritikin. This regimen requires severe total fat restriction. In recent years, Pritikin has liberalized his view of non-saturated fats. I admire the Pritikin doctors for their commitment to prevention of heart disease, which has included a successful promotion of exercise. But the problem with the Pritikin diet, which its proponents acknowledge, is that it is hard to follow and requires a tremendous commitment on the part of the patient. Also, the high carbohydrate content of the diet can worsen triglycerides in certain patients. It definitely is not a diet for the general public. In the early 1970s, Dr. Robert Atkins wrote the Dr. Atkins Diet Revolution, which shocked all by advocating the exact opposite of the low-fat gospel. He called for a diet high in saturated fat and low in carbs and was immediately denounced by the medical and nutritional establishment. The criticism was undermined by the fact that the diet seemed to work much better than the low-fat, high-carb American Heart Association diet. It was also attacked in part because Dr. Atkins limited carbs so severely that the body fat was broken down for fuel, causing a condition called ketosis. In otherwise healthy, overweight, or obese individuals, there is no evidence I know of that ketosis is a danger. It is, however, associated with a decrease in fluid volume and some dehydration, which can be a problem in patients with kidney problems or those on blood pressure-lowering medications. Overall, however, the specter of ketosis has been overstated. The major problem I have with the Atkins diet is a liberal intake of saturated fats rather than other good fats. There is evidence now that immediately following a meal of saturated fat, there is a dysfunction in the arteries, including those that supply the heart muscle with blood. As a result, the lining of the arteries, the endothelium, is predisposed to constriction and clotting. This is what leads to heart attacks. Imagine, under the right, or rather the wrong circumstances, eating a meal that's high in saturated fat can trigger a heart attack. In addition, after a high-fat meal, certain elements in the blood, called remnant particles, persist for longer than is healthy. These particles contribute to the buildup of plaque in the vessel wall. None of this was known at the time Dr. Atkins developed his diet, but we do know it now. These adverse effects do not occur when the unsaturated fats are consumed. This is why we have strongly encouraged the right fats on the South Beach diet. They make meals taste good while they actually contribute to healthy vessels. The other major diet phenomenon of the recent past has been Dr. Dean Ornish's plan. The Ornish approach is similar to Pritikin's. It calls for severe total fat restriction and liberal consumption of carbohydrates. It also emphasizes exercise and relaxation techniques. In several small studies, he has demonstrated improved vascular health as a result of his diet. The biggest problem that I see in the Ornish approach is one that he readily acknowledges. It is difficult to follow. Another issue is its restriction of total fats. The polyunsaturated and monounsaturated fats are good for you and for your vessels, so why not use them to make meals taste better? Also troubling is that in selected patients, the high carb intake can induce the prediabetes syndrome. Since at least 1/4 of Americans are predisposed to this syndrome, and it is present in more than 50% of those who have had heart attacks, it is no small concern. Dr. Ornish developed his diet when the deleterious effect of carbs was virtually unknown. Today, he is putting greater emphasis on high-fiber carbohydrates that will not induce prediabetes. I know and admire Dr. Atkins and Dr. Ornish. They have successfully fought conventional wisdom and have both contributed to the country's growing focus on heart attack prevention via improved diet and lifestyle. They have been criticized for the commercial success of their programs, but have persevered. Unless someone popularizes the science of nutrition, America will never get its difficulties with obesity and heart disease under control. It is my purpose to teach neither low-fat nor low-carb. I want you to learn to choose the right fats and the right carbs. You will learn to enjoy foods that taste good, satisfy your appetite, and don't create hunger hours later. In this manner, you can develop the food plans that are best for you, for both short-term weight loss and long-term weight maintenance, and for optimal health. I started this recording by describing in a nutshell how you would pass the initial weeks of the South Beach diet. Now I'll back up and tell you in greater detail how a typical day will go. Let's start with the first day of phase one. You no doubt treated yourself to a memorable meal the night before, but whatever carb-driven cravings you prompted came as you slept, with no further damage done. By the time you wake up today, your bloodstream is a relatively clean slate. The immediate goal is to keep it that way. We will accomplish that simply by not introducing any bad carbs into your system. We'll begin with a two-egg omelet fortified by two slices of Canadian bacon, cooked in a spray of olive or canola oil. You may yearn for your usual toast or bagel, but if you can get your mind off bread, the rest of you will follow. This will be your first test of the new regimen. It may take a few days to wean yourself from the customary morning dose of carbs, but it's our goal in phase one to begin reversing your body's likely inability to process sugars and starches properly, the condition at the root of most weight problems. To accomplish this, we need to cut off all carbs but the healthiest ones, meaning we'll have those highest in fiber and nutrients and lowest in sugars and starches. Vegetables and salads only, in other words, at least for these 2 weeks. This morning's combination of proteins, the eggs and Canadian bacon, and good fats, that's the oil, will keep your stomach full and occupied with digestion. You won't have to contend with hunger pangs now or later this morning. It didn't have to be the Canadian bacon omelet. We could have gone with two eggs and some asparagus, broccoli, mushrooms, or peppers. That would have introduced some good vegetable fiber to the mix. An omelet with ham or low-fat cheese would have been fine too. With this meal, you can have coffee or tea if you like, with low-fat milk and sugar substitute. There are many to choose from nowadays. I prefer one that's actually derived in part from a sugar, although it has no calories. Some diets prohibit coffee or tea because caffeine can intensify cravings on occasion. But you've got enough changes to contend with without having to give up your morning coffee too. A phenomenon I've noticed when dealing with overweight people is how many of them skip breakfast altogether. Especially women, for some strange reason. It's not even necessarily an attempt to save on calories. They say they just don't like eating first thing in the morning. The problem is that this allows blood sugar to drop and hunger to increase over the course of the morning. This results in powerful cravings for a lunch that includes carbs of questionable value, the very kind guaranteed to keep you overweight. So especially if you're trying to fight off obesity, skipping breakfast is a bad idea. Now, I would like to begin talking about how to plan your meals. Whether you feel the need for a mid-morning snack or not, you should be ready for one by 10:30 or so. Wisely, you remember to pack a part skim milk mozzarella stick. As I said previously, the only low-fat foods I recommend for dieters are milk, cheese, and yogurt, because they're the only ones that don't add bad carbs to replace the fats. The sugar is limited to lactose, which is milk sugar, and this is an acceptable component of the South Beach diet. You can find cheese sticks in most supermarkets. They've become a favorite snack for children. They're convenient and they taste good. Most important, they do the job of filling you up with good fats and good protein. That means you won't arrive at the lunch hour feeling famished. When lunch rolls around, you may have a salad, lettuce, and tomato mixed with grilled chicken or fish dressed in a vinaigrette made with olive oil. You'll also have water or beverage containing no sugar. On the other day, you might choose grilled shrimp over a bed of greens or tomato stuffed with tuna salad. Niçoise salad is great too. All these dishes can easily be made at home, and thanks to the trend toward fresh, healthy dining, they can usually be found in restaurants too. But don't even think about limiting the amount you eat. The point of this diet is to eat well. Food is one of life's dependable pleasures, and it can be a wholesome one if you're eating right. Accomplish that, and you'll be free to indulge in the improper things from time to time. I hope you are beginning to see the pattern of these meals. They're all combinations of healthy carbohydrates, proteins, and fats. They are normal, everyday dishes intended to satisfy your hunger while depriving your system of the low-quality sugars and starches that have wreaked such havoc on your blood chemistry and your waistline. You may have noticed that we're not discussing calorie counts, fat grams, or portion sizes. The South Beach diet is designed so that you don't pay attention to any of that. One hallmark of this program is its simplicity. Life is complicated enough without having to weigh your food before you eat it. If you're eating the right foods, you don't need to obsess over how much of them you eat. Since fats create the sensation of feeling full and satisfied more efficiently than carbs do, you won't sit in front of the TV all night popping bites of steak into your mouth, though you can easily imagine snacking for hours on potato chips or cookies. By the time you finish listening to this recording, you'll have a strong overall grasp of which foods you can eat freely, which you need to enjoy in moderation, and which you'll do without. You'll understand the principles of metabolism, not as a matter of academic interest, but in a practical, nuts-and-bolts way that will give you a basic understanding of how foods affect your blood chemistry and how that then determines what you weigh. You will actually learn how to control your blood chemistry and your metabolism through food choices. Knowing how individual foods affect your internal workings will help you lose weight and maintain the weight loss. In the future, if you ease up on the diet and find you've gained a few pounds, you'll know how to undo the damage. The glycemic indexes of food will be important tools to help you understand which foods contribute to obesity. But once you learn these basics, you'll have all the knowledge you'll need to eat properly. You'll find it easy to cook at home or eat out while sticking to the plan.